Hiroshima.
Hey, Jellyheads, and welcome to another episode of No U-Turn to the Drive-In, the show where we review the obscure B-call or just plain bad movie drive across the camera lens. And we're your hosts, Lucas Wilson and
David Halstead.
And tonight, we are reviewing Sharktopus.
And what's it about, Lucas?
Well, I'm glad you asked, David. A half-shark, half-octopus creature created for the military creates a whole lot of terror in Mexico while a scientist who helped create it tries to capture or kill it. Director Declan O'Brien, writer Mike McLean, and starring Eric Roberts, Karen Burson, Sarah Malakulane, and others.
And what year was this made in?
2010.
What? That's recent.
Really that recent?
Yeah.
Wait, did you get it when it came out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it in, like, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Isn't that something?
Yeah. I mean, we watched my copy.
Was the copy the first time you saw it, or did you see it on Sci-Fi Channel first?
No, I saw it...
In Walmart,
yes.
You're like, Sharktopus.
Well, I'd heard about it before.
Not a whole lot of time to hear about it.
Really? There was press about this.
Yeah. As much press as Sharknado.
Sharknado. I'm looking forward to Sharknado.
That's not Corman.
No, it's not, but it's still that wacky aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's an interesting thing, that aesthetic of the campy B-movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Movies that are done intentionally surreal, but also almost in that Harlequin formulaic style.
I don't know. Before doing the show, I didn't quite like, I personally thought it was like mostly just nobody knew what they were doing and it was just all awful. But now after doing this show, I can tell that this was done intentionally this way, even though, yeah, some of the talent is just bad, but it's like no one sets out to make.
Well, they're... And even then, they're not trying to make it bad. They're not trying to make it, oh, that sucked. They're trying to make it so you leave going, Sharktopus, that was awesome. But you went in with very low standards to begin with,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And the fact that they, I feel that it's formulaic to a point where it's like, you know what to expect when you pick up the box or when you turn it on, you know? When you start watching this, Sharktopus, what are you going to say? It's dumb, but still entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Their main aim is to entertain. I did not intend for that to be a rhyme. I'm kind of going, wow, it's like I did that intentionally. I didn't think of that through. But is it worthwhile to pick up those? You know, like, I made the Harlequin reference. Harlequin novels are written on a formula. You have to hit these certain points. And lots of people refer to them as like junk food or comfort media.
Uh-huh.
There is sort of a more relaxed attitude going into something like Sharktopus than even like recently we went to see Pacific Rim, you know?
Yeah.
That's like Pacific Rim, expectations way up there, right?
Right.
And that delivered.
Yep.
But Sharktopus, expectations are low. You figure you'll get like pizza and wings, and you'll hang out with your film. You know you're going to talk over the film, and that's okay. It's a more relaxed atmosphere,
uh-huh,
and attitude that you as an audience member go into, and then you are, like, predicting, they're setting stuff up so much that you're sitting there talking to your friends going, this is when the shark's going to get, oh, yep, what happened, what did I tell you? And they know you're going to do that, and they do it so you make you feel like, yep, I called it, and you feel good about yourself.
I don't know if I feel good about myself. It's like...
Well, that's a generalization.
I know you. I was like, Dave knows this is coming. I'm going, hey, Dave, right? Do that scene now that Roger Corman steps onto a beach and there's a girl...
I love
finding,
that.
Found like a doubloon.
Our patron saint of bad movies himself.
Yes. Shows up on a beach.
Watching spots, a girl.
Watching this half-naked girl. Got a metal detector digging in the sand. She finds like a copper doubloon.
Yeah.
And then she gets sucked into the water by Sharktopus, but then the look on Corman's face is just, he's like, he's not shocked, he's just like,
huh? Huh? At first he's confused. He's like, what? And he's like, huh? Hmm. Ooh, it's a balloon.
Picks it up, bites it. Yeah, he's off, smiling.
Yeah. It's such a surreal moment. He's more fascinated than, like, concerned when she's getting pulled into the water by the tentacles. Yeah, he's just like, huh, interesting. I'm having a much more interesting day than I expected I would have.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, doubloon. But this camp B-movie aesthetic, it started out as just low-budget films that went on before the features, you know, that they didn't put really much money or attention into. And it was something to show on the screen, probably while people were getting popcorn. It was, with cartoons and stuff, which actually sounds like a really fun event. I mean, we never really get to experience that. It's like, go to the theater, there's cartoons, there's a cheap movie on before the big feature you came to see.
That used to happen before every Pixar movie. Hmm. There was always like a small film before.
Oh, the cartoon.
There's like
not the B movie.
But nowadays, no, there's no film before the film. It's all just first you get commercials. Well,
sometimes there are double features, but those are usually combining two bad films these days.
These are just commercials, trailers.
Right. To wrap up the history lesson, you get to the 50s, they start making these things for their own entertainment value, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People making films cheaply, usually starring young actors just trying to break into the business, or older actors whose career is fading,
mm-hmm.
which was sort of an interesting thing. And just historically, just the catalog of these films.
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. Jack Nicholson got started working with Roger Corman. So did Martin Scorsese. But yeah, it became sort of film school for a lot of people who later became big names that we grew up knowing. And then it eventually led to the independent film scene. And then today, I mean, we've got the Netflix and the direct-to-video stuff that's mm-hmm. just like constantly coming out with either crazy big monster movies and horror flicks or like the dramas, you know, little indie dramas.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting about the B-movie is that you can break with conventions. You can probably get away with anything as long as you can do it.
Yeah.
You can't obviously have the big and grand things like the huge special effects that you would have in a big budget blockbuster. So you can't create whole worlds like Avatar, but you can create narrative structures that you wouldn't find in a big budget film. You can take risks that they can't take in big budget films. You can say, we're going to have a monster that's half shark, half octopus. Because why the fuck not? Half shark, half octopus, all killer. And there is a certain joy to these kinds of films. Like, you see here Sharktopus, and you see that image, and you just can't help it. You start to smile. It's like, that's a crazy idea. I'm so glad that exists.
The Corman films in particular, the ones that he produces, have a particular feel about them, like an aesthetic.
Yes.
I can't quite place what causes it, but usually everything's really like bright and colorful.
Yeah, you don't feel like it's a downer.
No. Even when Donald Kroc and Super Gator are raging across an island eating helpless people.
And it's funny. They don't take themselves seriously. They just have fun with it. They just make it fun. Now, some big budget movies I have a gripe with because they're just no fun at all. It's like, so sometimes you go to a movie that's like, this should be fun, and they're taking themselves way so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get right into the breakdown.
This is the part of the show where we break down the movie into four separate categories and rate them on a 0-4 basis.
And our categories are plot, performances, cinematography and sound, and art direction. Lucas, start us off with plot.
Well, the plot is, there's this shark-octopus hybrid created by some kind of government contractor.
Yeah, it's not the government. Purposes. It's like this guy made the thing and is trying to sell it to the government.
Yes. And it, the person piloting the shark was an idiot. Flies it too close to the surface of the water, boat hits it, Shark breaks loose of its restraints. Shark goes nuts killing things. They try to stop it. There was a guy who used to be on the team, but he wanted more money, but they call him back. Romance forms between...
Of course.
Between scientist's daughter and renegade
badass
scientist. And there is an obnoxious reporter and her sidekick who follow Sharktopus around trying to get the latest scoop. They die.
Amazing.
Everyone dies except...
That is a character type in, like, in not only B-horror movies, but almost all horror movies have that one person you just really want to die because they represent some aspect of society that we hate. Like, they're obnoxious, they're rude, they're just bad people.
Yeah.
People. And it's symbolically getting back at those types of people you can't stand in real life by seeing their proxy get destroyed.
A long time for that.
Yeah.
Usually those people are killed off at least halfway through.
I've seen many cases where they're like almost the last person that get killed off.
Yeah.
Because think about it. If you're writing somebody, a character who's just completely obnoxious and the audience hates them, you got to keep them around for a little while. Just getting rid of them is like you're taking a fun character who's making the situations more interesting just by being so abrasive or obnoxious that taking them out soon, it ruins opportunities creatively where your audience is going to be, oh, get him now. Oh.
Now, this is pretty much the formula for Corman's monster movies.
Mm-hmm.
Where
there's a bunch of character
there
types.
There's a genetic experiment.
Right.
That gets loose. There's always, like, there's the badass.
Mm-hmm.
The girl.
Yeah. The crooked evil guy.
Crooked, usually some businessman or scientist or military figure. Sometimes related
Science.
Or not related. Yes. And then there's like the annoying person who ends up getting killed at some point. So there's like the throwaway character, then your lead man and woman, and then your villain. And it usually goes like
bing, bang,
bang,
boom.
Boom. Always in the end, monster gets wrangled or destroyed. I think they've always been destroyed. Just like we.
It's more satisfying to destroy the monster. Blow it up or something.
Sort of reviewed Donald Crocker's Super Gator during her first special interview with
Travis Ritchie,
who happened to be in that film, and another Roger Corman.
And it was very similar to this.
Very similar. You saw all the same points.
Mm-hmm.
You set up the characters, monster gets out, people die.
Yeah.
Characters die, main characters. You know.
You just have to have a lot of situation where the monster just creates havoc and rips people apart.
Yeah, lots of ripping apart. Like, the scene where when we were watching Donald Croc versus Super Gator, there was a moment where Travis and some other dude are shooting nonstop at Dino Croc Super Gator. And, no, Donald Croc, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're like, come on, Dino Croc, hurry up and eat them.
Yes. That's how you feel in these films. You have no pity for these one-dimensional characters.
It's always fun, like, and a lot of these films happen on, like, some sort of tropical beach.
Of course, because if you're going to shoot something that's just for fun, why not go to some place you're going to enjoy spending your time?
Yeah. So there's a lot of scenes in these Corman films where lots of bikini girls in the ocean, some actress telling us, like, okay, just flap around on the water going,
we'll do it in post.
It's just like, watching this, I remove the shark from the scene, and I'm thinking, these people had to act something. A lot of times I saw when people were being dragged to the beach, I could see that they're just pushing themselves backwards towards the water, and they go like, we're just going to CGI that in. And you know those two guys sitting on the side of the cruise ship on the Queen Mary? And
oh, no! Not like this!
I saw that guy, like, he didn't get pulled off. He jumped off. I saw it. It's just they had the CG arm stuck to him. Yeah. His buddy though,
it's
got
great.
Pulled off pretty well.
Yeah, just like, whoa. Well, he fell like sideways. This guy like fell forward, so it was more obvious that he was kind of pushing himself off.
He had a great beard.
Yeah. That guy had a huge beard. We're not kidding. It looked like it was his too.
Probably.
And just that line right before he got pulled off into the water by the tentacle.
Oh, no, not like this.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just before that, they were talking about Sharktopus, weren't they? Sightings of a
monster? Were talking about, like, people getting caught in nets and drowning.
Oh, people, all right, that, never mind. Yeah, they were talking about people having freak accidents and dying.
Yeah, at sea, specifically. But there was time when they had a puppet shark head.
I know there was times they had puppet tentacles.
Yes.
For underwater scenes, because they were like, this is going to be too complicated to CG. So we need them.
No, they had, like, it looked, you could tell, because it didn't look like the regular CG sharks, but it looked like foam.
Did it?
Rubber, yeah.
Have you heard of Shark Ghost or Ghost Shark?
What?
It's coming on the heels of Sharknado. I saw the trailer the day after Sharknado.
Oh my god, you have to show me this
and
trailer.
And the shark is like a puppet shark, just made transparent on the screen.
I have to see this. That's too good.
Maybe it's older, I don't know. I just remember seeing it at work.
That is amazing. Well, it's like a piece of candy, you know? You know, it's bad for you, but you really enjoy it. So, yeah, the plot?
Very stupid.
Very dumb, but it's every plot of these monster movies, pretty much, isn't it?
Yeah, all of them. You got, what, Sharktopus, Super Gator, you also got Dino Croc, and you got Super Gator, their own separate movies, and then you got Mega Shark.
Versus Super Gator or something?
Maybe, I think there's also just Mega Shark.
Yeah, Mega Shark.
And then you got Sharknado, Shark Ghost,
or it's
Ghost
like, Shark. Whatever. You go into these, and you sort of like black out of your mind that it's a bad movie. You have no expectations of it being good, but you just like... You just laugh and you enjoy it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what do you say, man?
Well, I mean, we keep repeating ourselves. Plot formula. Plot is formula. So do we just give it a 2 and move on?
Yeah. 2 stars.
Not for while you can, monkey boy.
Performances.
Performances. Oh, joy.
Not many. Very.
Science. I'm too drunk to science. That's not a line, by the way.
No.
That's just the head scientist who created Sharktopus and is trying to, like, protect it and so he can sell it for money. And even though it's killing people, he doesn't care. He just keeps drinking and gets drunker and drunker as the movie goes on. So at the end, he says a line where he's like, for science. It's just lets that S hang there.
Mm-hmm. I thought the girl was okay.
The girl was okay. The badass guy, I could not stand him. He was obnoxious.
Yeah.
I liked the guy in Dino Croc versus Sharktopus.
Oh, the Cajun?
Yes. I liked that guy.
Yeah,
He was at least fun.
Because he was miscast, too. He was just like this guy that he was not anywhere near the description that this guy
Dino Croc, Super Gator.
Yeah. But the hero kind of was hoping he'd maybe die or something.
He wasn't good. He wasn't even just the camp aspect. He wasn't good.
What about his buddy? Saved him in Iraq.
He was better. He was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these have interesting side characters. I also kind of like the guy who's like the kind of the dirty guy.
Oh.
Who gives the reporter information?
Pez. Yeah, he was the guy who had a picture of Sharktopus, and the girl reporter showed up, and he like showed him around, and he died faster than I thought he was going to die. I didn't think he would have died, really, because he was like, I don't know.
He wouldn't have died if she hadn't taken the keys out of the boat's starter.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Thrown them. And he's like, we need to get out of here. And she's like, no, I need my story. I need to see this octopus on camera. And he yanks the keys, throws them away. And he's like, you're going to get us killed. And then he walks down to get the runs down to get the keys, and the tentacle grabs him.
Yep. Sure enough, he gets sharktopused.
Yep. So, what did you think about the old guy who was the scientist and was the father of the female lead?
He reminds me a lot of all the other. They seem to cast like the same. They almost always look the same.
Uh huh. A lot of them, like in Dino Proctor's Super Gator, it was David Carradine.
Yeah. Even everybody's, it's like they keep casting people that look like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They really do. They have a type they're going for, and that type is David Carradine. Unfortunately, yeah. He's gone now.
I know.
But he was a cool guy.
So, which is weird, because he, in Donald Crock vs. Super, it's weird. In Incredible Petrified World, he looked really old.
That's his father, John Carradine.
Oh, okay. Never mind. For some reason, I thought, I didn't notice.
You thought they were John Carradine and David Carradine were the same person.
Yes. In that moment, yes.
Lucas.
I'm sorry, Dave. I was a little confused. I was like, well, he looks old in this, but he also looks old in Donald Crock vs. Super Gator.
David Carradine is John Carradine's son.
Oh, I got that. I got that, Dave.
Now you do. Yeah, the scientist girl had a lot of attitude in her role, and you didn't feel like she was acting that badly.
Mm-hmm.
She was just given, like, obviously the lines in this aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I think
she brought game.
She did the best out of everybody.
That's her top. And then Pez. But, oh my God, the cameraman for the reporter. I'm sorry, dude. Either A, you have a terrible lisp. Or B, you were doing an accent that you shouldn't have been doing and sounded like mushmouth.
Oh, I will have to dock points on the girl, though, because she started out trying to do some kind of accent, but then dropped it halfway through the movie.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. The scientist girl. Back to her.
She could get her tone and attitude and line deliver, but she always kept trying to do some accent sometimes.
What country are you from?
What country are you from? Once you see The Room, you'd be wondering the same thing. What is your accent? Because it's natural. It's his accent. But you're like, where? So,
I'm not going to be able to leave this week, am I, until I see The Room.
We'll do it right after this, if I can find it.
So, there's a possibility we'll be reviewing The Room next week.
Yep.
We're not guaranteeing that yet.
So.
I'm going down the line.
You also had,
you just had
Kevin
a lot
Smith's
of...
Smith's buddy was in that, too.
What?
The pirate radio guy.
Ralph Garman played a part who is, he's a actual radio DJ on K-Rock. He's a morning show guy. And he's on Hollywood Babylon podcast with Kevin Smith. I really like him. And he's talked about performing on this. He's like, he showed the scene where Sharktopus pulls him up and he has the line, "Damn you, Sharktopus!" His character trait is that he doesn't believe the Sharktopus is real. He thinks it's a hoax.
Yeah.
And gets killed.
Except his...
He says, "There's no such thing as a Sharktopus!" As the tentacle, and the tentacle wraps around him.
Leaving his lady sidekick.
But when he dies, he's just like, flailing his arms around.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, flailing around, and then all of a sudden he's like, replaced with like a CGI version of him being thrown into the water.
Right.
Yeah.
But... He talked about that on the podcast, and he said, the director just told me, he says, I asked the director what to do. He said, just do this, and we'll do the rest in post. So, taking his lead, I went, Those were Ralph Garman's words that I was...
Has he mentioned over several episodes, or was there an episode where he...
There was an episode where he mentioned that.
Does he just offhand mention it, or does he actually talk about his time making that movie?
Well, he's mentioned Sharktopus several times, and he said, damn you, Sharktopus, a lot on that show.
Damn you, Sharktopus!
Especially when it was coming out,
when
it was being released, he would do it constantly, like the audience would shout it at him, and he'd shout it back. I love the fact that he was a DJ, they only had one song.
Yeah. He'd go, he'd play a song and come back, say something, pop it.
It was always the same song that they were playing.
That's all
on that.
They wanted to pay for.
But yeah, he said he also had a lot of fun working on it. And he promoted the hell out of it on the podcast.
Of course, if you're in it.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. And he would always joke that he was in one of Kevin Smith's movies called Red State. And in that movie, his character has no lines, which was partially his call. He only had a few lines, and he said... To Kevin, that he said it would be more interesting and dramatic if the guy didn't speak, you know. And so he then said, at least Sharktopus, they gave me lines.
There's
a joke between them.
I forget what movie it is, but I think it's a movie with Clint Eastwood in it. I think. don't quote me on that, but I remember reading in like a, it's like scenes in a movie, you know, a Cracked article, essentially. Yes.
And the movie was Magnum Force.
Oh, is it? Yeah. And he was supposed to say a bunch of stuff to the other guy.
Right.
But he decided it'd be better if he said nothing.
And just stared at him.
And it creates it just makes the other guy sound look so much loonier, like a crazy dude.
Yeah.
And it works much better.
Hal Holbrook.
Yeah.
Just sounds like a lunatic in that.
And it makes it work, I guess, better than...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I love that scene, actually. Magnum Force, mm-hmm. Hal Holbrook yelling his head off. And Clint Eastwood just staring at him, just like, his eyes are saying, you're crazy. You are so crazy. I'm sorry. No, it's Clint Eastwood's eyes, so it's more like, you're crazy. You're so freaking crazy. And you know what? That makes my day.
So.
Another one, I think I read the same article, because another one was... Harrison Ford in The American President? Or what was that? Air Force One?
Air Force, yeah. It was like he played a president again? Another?
No, it was Air Force One, sorry. Yeah, in Air Force One, there was a similar thing where he went to the... I think for some reason the writer was on set, and he went on... But not always. So usually there's a reason why the writer would be on set. And he went over to the writer and said, look, this whole thing you wrote here is great, but... I can say all of this with a look. And the writer was like, give me the look. And he did the look. He's like, you're right. So yeah, that happens where sometimes an expression says a lot more than a lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
Actors know. The good
even
ones.
Even our actors, they were giving us
Yeah, they were
tips.
Teaching yeah. us a lot. Yeah, yeah. In our little did project.
This instead of that.
Coming
like,
soon.
And, like,
and we... Pretty much always took their lead, yeah, took their call and agreed.
Most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time.
So, what are you feeling this, man?
For performances, they were fun bad, but I can't even give them two. It's a one.
A one? Yeah, because, I mean, we did, like Travis said in his personal opinion,
mm-hmm.
You asked, are people just playing up the camp, or are they actually really bad actors? And he suspected they're probably just really bad actors. So,
unfortunately, I think so that may be the case.
Most of the people in the movie.
Or at least inexperienced actors, because as we know from seeing a performance of Jack Nicholson's
yes.
when he was younger, that sometimes you can just be miscast and do a bad job.
Yeah, he was awful in that movie.
But we know he's a great actor.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
he found his way somewhere.
I always feel weird. It's like when we talk about old movies, I can say, well, they're dead now, and if they're still alive, they don't give a fuck about my opinion. But it's like, these people are still around. This movie was made recently, and they might still care. Not that they're ever going to listen to this, but I think about that. I want to hurt their feelings. No, I must review, and I must review honestly. One star.
One star.
God damn you all to hell!
So,
cinematography and sound. They, first, let's get this off the bat right away. They did a weird thing where they would have different screens, like they...
Oh, yes.
They'd partition
that's
off,
like
split
something
screen.
Something in editing they did, yeah. Where, yeah, they would take... It was always during phone conversations.
Right.
Where you would have... They would shrink down the... Instead of jumping between the people, they would have them all at the same time. Now, I think I've seen instances where stuff like this has worked.
Mm-hmm.
But this was just like...
This felt really awkward, and
it
was really distracting.
In there. It was like, it's not... I get,
it also felt really crude.
Yeah, because like, I would look, and like, sometimes even, it's like still the same people talking, and it like, they didn't move much, but like, I saw a frame just move over like 3 pixels, and it's like, boop, and I'm like, why did...
It looked terrible, one of the
it
worst
wasn't, yeah, it didn't look very planned. Like, first, it looks like, you know... Okay, you got the two, one here, one
at
down
first,
there.
At first, it looks like, oh, that's interesting, and it catches your attention, but then it draws too much attention
to
itself.
Because it's just like, he keeps adding in more and more squares, and they start showing up weird shapes, and...
Yeah, they keep moving.
Weird framing, yeah.
It wasn't an effective tool to be entertaining. It was just kind of awkwardly distracting,
mm-hmm.
and brought too much attention to how poorly it was done in the end.
Something, it's weird, like, there was something about the way they shot people's reactions that felt really awkward to me. It was like they would do a close-up on the person's face,
mm-hmm.
but something about the way they framed it, like, it felt like I felt I noticed
mm-hmm.
it.
I know what you're talking about, especially when the sharktopus comes on land.
Yeah, and they're all going, ah, 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 oh, ah. What's that sharktopus? My ice cream. It's, I don't know. It's like either they're in the center of the screen or there's something like I can, it's like I feel that it's a close up. It's like I know what they're like. I can't place it. It's just something because I notice it that it's something that you shouldn't notice.
Right.
It's not very good.
It's like, whoa, cool special effects, man. You
know, most of the time it was very cut and dry, like very standard shoot. They were mostly done pretty competent. It wasn't like they didn't know what they were doing with the camera completely.
Mm-hmm.
And they even knew to...
But felt like it was done on the quick.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I feel this movie was probably done in just like a few short days, mm-hmm. a week. And
it's like, we don't have time to set up this close-up, so we're just going to do one take, moving the camera towards your face.
Yep.
Here, go.
Yeah,
and that's why they felt off. Mm-hmm. Like, the person like didn't have time to prepare, like... or it's just like, just look over there. And it was like, what?
Yeah.
And the cameraman's doing their thing, but like they don't know what the camera's going to do. Or it's like,
at least they knew in the boat shots to right. go like handheld with them so that they could not get stuck with the boat rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Except for like there was one shot that it was attached to the boat that I remember seeing. But it seemed like they did that on purpose for that shot. I was fine with it. But it almost feels like a novice would... Oh, I want to make sure it's stable. I don't want to seem like a novice. So let's put the tripod down on the boat. And then it just like...
Yeah.
It's weird, yeah.
When you're on a boat, you have to have a handheld so it's not shaky cam. Yeah.
Or, you know, at the most, wear like a Steadicam rig. With it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an awesome boat, by the way.
Oh, the scientist boat?
Yeah.
Not the fishing boat or the chase boat.
But the scientist,
man, he must have been rich. Yeah. But he had like a huge boat, TV that came out of this wood stand that rises up. I remember when I was a kid, I went to the barber shop.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, there was several like yacht magazines. And I would just look through them wishing.
Crazy I think they're really like cool. I would love to own a nice boat like that.
Yeah.
Screw living in a house. I want a boat.
I remember seeing, there was like a personal like, ocean liner
mm-hmm.
in the small harbor in Maine that my parents live in, and my grandfather, we were staying on like there's an island that somebody my parents know, and we were letting us stay there, but my stepfather and I went on a boat ride together, and it was sitting there just like this personal like ocean liner, sitting a huge boat, but it was obviously just this one person owned this thing, because they were from like Australia, I think. It was ridiculous. Like, how much money do you need to have to be able to maintain having this thing? It was like some serious dude was on that boat that day.
Mr. Gates?
Yeah, you'd have to be a sustainable billionaire in order to own that thing.
No, that's a little excessive. I still like a nice little boat.
Yeah, that was excessive. I mean, like, I wouldn't mind, like, hanging out on it.
Of course.
For a day if I could. I would not want to own it, and I'd feel too much pressure to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah?
Cinematography.
Oh, B minus. Wait, that's not part of a rating system, is it?
Two.
One.
One?
One.
I think so.
Yeah. And think of all the shots of people that was like flailing around that they did in post with the special effects. Think of how those look. Take the special effect away. Think of how those look, you know.
Sure.
One star.
God damn you all to hell!
So, last segment.
Art direction. Obviously, you have one of the coolest monsters to come along in a while. Sharktopus.
Half shark.
Half octopus.
So, it's the head of a shark.
Yes.
With really long tentacles.
Mm-hmm. I think that's brilliant. It's silly, but brilliant. I saw somebody actually made, like, plushies of Sharktopus.
I want one now.
I know.
Oh, man. And so the monster, it's basically like a shark's head. So you got like a fish head.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just figured out how to make like it not look too awkward to have tentacles flying out of this thing. And then the tentacles had spears on the end of them.
Sharktopus was not like an animal that just like ate people like Jaws was. Sharktopus murdered people.
Yeah, he'd be like,
he stabbed them to death. He cut their throats.
There'd be people just standing there talking. Tentacle out of the air. He loves stabbing people in the throat.
Yeah.
That was his big thing. He got the scientists that way.
Yeah.
That death scene was funny. It was just like, pumpkin.
Yeah. Because he's trying to tell her the code, but the code is his nickname for his daughter. And pumpkin.
Daddy!
Anyways, the CGI, we've talked about it. It's not good.
Oh, yeah. It's...
But it's real. They gave it a lot of personality.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was the explosions of, or the bullet muzzle flash.
It's funny. Yeah.
And
it's
the like, sharktopus and the tentacles. They
Highwaymen have much better muzzle flashes than yeah. sharktopus.
Something you've done on your laptop. What's yeah. better than sharktopus?
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's things that you get wrong with, like when you first. I mean, I made the same mistake with
Our
second episode of Lost TV. The muzzle flashers were just tiny. Apparently, you got to make them huge to be believable.
Mm-hmm.
But they, in this, they were just like, the guns were farting.
Yeah.
Clouds of dust.
But Sharktopus, like I said, he had looks. He had certain little expressions.
And he could walk on land.
With the tentacles.
Yeah.
He could lift himself up and be like up in the trees and like shark eat down at people.
Yeah.
That was, whoever came up with the design, first of all, the design of Sharktopus is pretty fucking awesome.
Just look at the DVD cover.
Yeah.
What is it with sharks?
I think it's Jaws, man.
Yeah?
I think it's Jaws.
Jaws that did it?
It's this cultural connection that of Jaws.
I mean, you know, they're also just crazy cool looking animals. You look at them and they scream death.
Not only the idea of just this big thing that's just made to like rip into things, this eating machine,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that it's underwater and things that are underwater are a little creepy to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Even the nice things, seahorses, I don't know. Something underwater, you just picture like scary things coming up.
Yeah.
And the idea of not only being eaten by something, like it's one thing to be, it would be terrifying to be attacked by a bear, but on land, it's like, I'll still go through the woods, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I go to a beach, I think about sharks, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to go in the water.
Well, up in the Northeast, you know, too much to worry about.
Right. But I went down south and I went out into the water and we swam around and we actually went out further than everyone else, just like going around and in the surf, you know. You
could take out by undertow.
Yeah, and you could. We were out there and we were having fun, but I could just clearly imagine something coming, because Jaws is one of my favorite movies. I've probably seen it more than any other film I've ever watched. So it's like clear in my mind. Shark attack.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a little fin that comes up. It's just like that little bit of warning. But then, and then you turn on the Discovery Channel and you see Air Jaws and you're like, fuck it.
Air Jaws?
Air Jaws. Where they come up, like shoot up out of the
water. Oh, okay. All right.
They get air.
Yeah. Yeah.
You dolphin. Didn't see that on the Discovery Channel and just be like, shit.
The fucks fly.
This is... I know it's not the truth, but you just feel like the shark is the deadliest thing on the planet. If movies are to be believed. One of the brilliant things about Jaws is that it's a horror film, but unlike Dracula and Frankenstein, sharks really exist.
Oh, yeah.
And people do get eaten by them. Not the shark's fault, really. You know? Like, the shark is just an animal following instincts. But, yeah, it's like... It's a believable thing to be afraid of.
Yeah, because it exists.
Although this is Sharktopus, so it kind of took that element of the shark, which is scary, and it made it absurd. And it made it a little safer, you know?
Well, giant squids are kind of scary.
I have no fear of squids, actually.
People do get attacked by Humboldt squids.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just they're not weird to me. They're like jelly.
They're pretty deadly.
I know. I'm not denying that.
And they're smart as hell.
Sure. Yeah. But I don't know. They don't freak me out the same.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just a silly creature, but I love it. Even though it's not technically well done, they did it with an attitude and a personality that I thoroughly did enjoy.
How you feel, man?
I feel a 3.
A 3?
Yeah.
It's hard for me. Because tech-
it's based purely on enjoyment.
Technically.
Not technically.
Technically, the effects of this were crap.
Yes, it's true.
But that did add to the movie. That's hard to judge, man. I mean, it's a huge part of the camp.
Right. Now, I know technically I totally agree with you. It's two.
Well, graphics alone, it's a one.
Really?
It's pretty bad CGI. But then three for its worthiness and its...
Well, I'm counting how they used it. They used it in a fun way. I wish it had looked a little better. I honestly do. I wish it looked more like it does on the box cover. That would have been... It actually would have...
A little more textured?
A little more textured. It would have given a little bit more to the movie if it had been. So, I'm...
Two, I'm thinking.
I'm good with two.
All right. 2 stars.
Laugh for while you can, monkey boy.
So that's our ratings, and now we give our personal thoughts. And Lucas, do you, Barry, borrow or buy this film?
I'm going to say, I'm going to say borrow. It's almost a buy, but I think it's going to be a high borrow. So definitely check it out. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. A lot of these Corman films are fun. Just ridiculous stuff. I mean, I would like to see, I mean, Corman didn't make it, but Sharknado sounds like it could be promising.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it makes me want to make an over-the-top monster movie.
Yeah, it seems like it's so much fun to make it.
Yeah, and not too hard to do.
Well, there's not a very high standard.
Borrow it, folks.
All right.
David.
Yes?
Do you bury or borrow or buy?
I borrow. I agree that this is not a great film. It's formulaic, and there are a lot like them, although this... is a pretty good one. It's got a very unique, cool monster. A cooler monster than most of these.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that factor. There's a lot of... It's got a fun look, a bright look, and lots of silliness.
Mm-hmm.
So you can throw it on. You have a lot of fun watching it. I just don't think it has a lot of rewatch value.
Mm-hmm.
This is my second time seeing it, and I will tell you that the first time was a lot more fun.
Well, too bad I couldn't be for that experience, man.
And this was probably more fun... For you, you're just seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it has the sort of rewatch value that I would be looking for in a B-movie that I would want to buy.
Okay.
So borrow. Well, Lucas, that wraps things up for Sharktopus. Are you ready to hear? You know what's coming. You know what's coming. What's coming?
Atomic Cow?
Yes, the next installment of the Atomic Cow series. Now, disclaimer, I came up with this idea a while ago. And I've had a lot of fun with these Atomic Cow titles, but some people may have mentioned that it's dragging on a little bit. I don't know. I disagree. I'm having too much fun with this. But we are planning that when it ends, we are going to have a new segment here. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm super looking forward to it. We won't tell you what it is yet, but I'm just letting you know. It'll be a whole new thing. So look forward to that. But right now, get ready. To hear about the Atomic Cow 9, the Highway Cow.
Oh, no. No. No, no, no. 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 What is the description for this?
Well, I'm sorry, I have to do my Mr. Movie voice for this. In a world unlike any other world where a plague has wiped out all of humanity and cows have evolved to become the dominant species on the planet, one cow... must risk everything and take to the perilous roads of upstate New York in order to find the one bull who has the knowledge to unlock the secrets of the bean, which is said has the power to turn the polluted fields of earth into glorious crops once more. Does the Atomic Cow have the moxie to face the challenges of the wasteland and leave her hoofprint on this new world, or will she be torn apart by flying bears? Directed by Danvid Winchester.
It's a lot loaded into that only you and I are currently.
I'm sorry, folks. That was a huge inside joke.
You, me, and 10 other people only know.
Yeah, 10 people are going to be laughing their asses off when they hear that. But one day, maybe you will all know what that's about. Not all of it, probably. Some of it's too much of an inside joke. But one day soon, you'll all be able to... You'll look back on this episode and... laugh. It you'll get it later.
I'm sorry, I had too much fun with that. Nice parody, Dave.
I throw it over to you, Lucas. Wrap it up.
So what are we watching?
Apparently. Okay. I throw it over to you, Lucas. What will we be watching next week?
The Room?
You say The Room.
Okay. We can do that.
The Room it is!
This has been kind of a long time coming.
Yes, and he keeps talking about it and referencing it constantly. So I have
saw
to watch
it recently. Kay was referencing it, and she showed me, so now I got to show you.
This is how the plague spreads, that ends the world.
See if I... Oh, that's too long. I'll just do the brief here. All right. A happy-go-lucky banker sees his world fall apart when his friends begin to betray him one by one. Directed by Tommy Wiseau. Written by Tommy Wiseau. Starring Tommy Wiseau. So this is a famous...
Mm-hmm. I already have movie. Some opinions and theories about this film.
It's a very famous movie.
It's become
a lot
huge.
Of you probably have heard about it, but...
It is the new best worst movie ever made.
Mm-hmm.
It's the latest one of that.
And it came out
in Plan 9 back in the day. Then there was Troll 2. Now there's The Room. So, looking forward to that?
Maybe. All right. Well, gentle listeners, thanks for listening to this episode of Know Your Turns of Drive. And we're your host, Lucas Wilson and...
David Halstead.
If you enjoyed this episode, may I suggest you go to our website at suckersjustfish.com to find this and other podcasts. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really helps us out. If you're a fan, you want to help spread the madness, give us a like at facebook.com/psychojustfish or follow us on Twitter at Jellycast. If you get thoughts, words, comments, or questions, maybe a movie you think we should watch, send it our way at email@psychojustfish.com. It's been a fun one, folks.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho. Sure enough, he gets sharktopused.